This is Tech Talk for Accountants Show, where we discuss the hottest topics, tools, apps, and trends in the accounting industry. This show is sponsored by Rush Tech Support, who is offering all listeners of the show a free IT audit so you can know whether or not your business is at risk of being hacked, having a data breach, or getting fined hundreds of thousands of dollars for non-compliance. You can schedule a free check at rushtech.online/podcast.
And we are live with another episode of the Tech Talk for Accountants show. I'm your host, Andrew Lassise with Rush Tech Support, specializing in IT for the accounting industry. And with us today, Alvin Hagrick, who is going to discuss with us today about fraud. And he has a background in forensics. And I'll give you the opportunity, Alvin, to give us a little background on who you are and, you know, what kind of the path that you've taken in your field.
Oh, well, I got my bachelor's of accounting from Florida International University, master's of accounting at Nova Southeastern University, and became a CPA in 1996. I'm also a certified fraud examiner, certified in financial forensics, and certified in valuation analysis, and a certified insolvency and restructuring advisor. And I recently passed the third part of the certified business distress valuation. I got started in accounting by accident. I had to pick up some stuff, and it was at a Ponzi scheme. And we went out there, we picked all the records up, and I had no interest in accounting, and it was a summer job. So they said you had to write down every document you see here. And that's how I got started. And then a couple days later, the FDLE came out to our office and looked at the stuff. And there wasn't really much there that we could work with, but law enforcement folks. The guy actually went to jail on that one, but usually it's small stuff. People don't report these things. And I went from there.
So you kind of got your feet wet with, and this is like one of those episodes of like American Greed, like hearing about the Ponzi scheme. Like what was kind of the build out of it? What did that look like?
It was payphones. They sold them over and over again, and the first people got the money of the last people, and it eventually ran out of money, and people lost a lot of money.
And so what were some of the lessons you had learned or things to look for when it comes to fraud investigation?
Well, sometimes things don't look right, and you have to look at it and just look at every little piece to see what's wrong. And then you'll find something like a receipt for jet fuel. And you go, wait a minute, they don't have a jet. Why are they buying jet fuel? And so you call the FAA and look around to see if they have anything on that person in a jet.
So kind of stuff like following the clues of this piece doesn't make sense. And that kind of opens like a bag of worms into a whole other thing. And it's just really finding like that one piece. Do I understand that correctly? It's you get that little piece that opens up everything else.
Exactly.
And so when you're doing these investigations and you're looking into these things, one of the questions that I know comes up a lot is just why would people do this, especially if they know that there are people that do investigations? Like, what's kind of the motivation behind doing things like this?
A lot of it is greed. They like the high life, spending money on restaurants and going to bars and stuff, buying cars. Sometimes they're having financial difficulties because they're gamblers, or they have a relative that has a lot of medical bills. That happens quite a bit. with the smaller frauds is people are in trouble with medical bills. And, you know, sometimes the living beyond the means creates the financial difficulties. A lot of times when somebody's committing fraud, they're irritable and suspicious, and they have real control issues. So those are some of the things you look for. Sometimes they have family problems. They're going through a divorce, problems with their children. And then there are people you can just kind of spot because they have this attitude that they're going to do anything to get the sale, and they don't care if they break the rules, and just kind of can feel them out too with a little practice.
And so are these kind of traits that you think employers should be looking out for, or is this something that it's kind of few and far between, but this happens to be a commonality behind the people?
I would say living beyond the means is definitely always a red flag in any kind of fraud. But, you know, with an employer, an organization, you want to look at their family history, their behavior at work, if they don't take vacations or they're never sick. And then when you ask them to take time off, they refuse, stuff like that. Because usually when those people, they're hiding something, if they don't want to take time off or let you look at their work, that's a big sign.
Interesting. And but that doesn't always necessarily mean that there's fraud, right? I mean, there are people that are just hard workers, or is this like a kind of chicken and egg thing? Is it, you should be suspicious of these people, or are there potential for hard work?
They could be hard workers. I mean, everybody's innocent until proven guilty. You just have to watch them, have checks and balances to catch things like through review, background reports before you hire. You can prevent some of these things before they happen with background checks. But you have to watch everything, because if they're out there, they may be good workers, but they're out there, and the people that do fraud there's good people and bad people. You can feel them out. You have to have checks and balances to separate the hard workers from the bad workers. Preventative controls help a lot, and mm-hmm. detective controls.
And we see that a lot, not at the necessarily financial level, but in doing cybersecurity, there's kind of the, like you said, the innocent until proven guilty model, where it would be great to give everybody full access to everything. And just, you know, you tell the person on their first day, like, you're allowed to view these, you're not allowed to view these. And everyone just goes about their life following those directions. But I think there does come a time for pretty much anybody, and maybe not even at the high level of fraud, but just things happen where it's like, I need to just bend the rules this one time. And maybe they kind of have like that personal contract with themselves. Like, well, I'll take it right now because I have medical bills. I have a genuine need, not even like a, if someone has like a drug problem or something like that, just a genuine, I need the money right now. And instead of asking for help, I'll just take matters into my own hands, and I promise I'll pay it back. And I think that happens. The one piece that I think people are missing when it comes to that situation, correct me if I'm wrong, but it's once you get the taste of it, it's very difficult to then go back to where you were beforehand, knowing that it existed and knowing that you didn't get caught. Is that kind of like the snowball effect that you see?
It is a snowball effect because usually it's never just once. Once you do it and don't get caught, it's very easy.
And then the justification, right? Like, you know, they're a very profitable company, so I need this money to save somebody's life or whatever the justification is. And, you know, it's just like one of our built-in things is that even if we do something that we know necessarily may not be the right thing to do, we can kind of self-justify. And I know for myself, I was working at a tech company, and this was years ago, and their marketing, it was extremely, extremely aggressive. It was uncomfortably aggressive. We'll just leave it at that. And being on the tech side though, I'm just a guy fixing computers. That's all it is. How they came to me, that's not really my business. All I do is just fix the computers, and kind of just the mantra in the office was, yeah, we're being these really aggressive, slimy kind of people, but there are bad people that are doing this also. So at least we're the good guys. We're the ones that are really standing behind the customer, helping them out. And, you know, the owner, I know he was making a ton of money, because I'd see the board. This is before I owned my own company. So I was just like, oh my gosh, we did $25,000 in sales today. And he paid me $150. So that means he must have net 20.
Yeah, right.
He basically net $25,000. There's no overhead. There's no anything else. I only look at my piece in it. But it wasn't difficult for us to, you know, like on my first day, it was like, why are all these people mad when we're just trying to help and kind of piece it together? And it's like, well, I'm getting paid, you're getting paid, we're helping people. But that justification piece, nothing was really bad. And even looking back on it now, talking about it years later, that kind of holds true. And I mean, you know, we weren't committing fraud or anything like that, but it was, we can justify this. So do you think that majority of the people can just hold true to, I promised that I would do it just once and then I'm going to give it back? Or does it kind of turn into just pretty much, and I guess you only know about the ones that get caught, right? Because if they didn't get caught, then they didn't get caught.
Right.
So what does that usually look like? Is it like it's usually been going on for years? Is it looks like a couple months, weeks? What's kind of the time frame that you usually see with these things?
Sometimes it can go on for years. The owner isn't paying attention, and all of a sudden he uses his credit card and they decline it, and he's going, uh-oh, what's going on? And he calls the bank and everything's maxed out and his accounts are dry, and he looks at the guy out of the CFO writing the checks, and something like he was diverting the money from where it needed to be and put it in his pocket.
We actually saw that with one of our clients where she had let, it was basically her right-hand person go. And she was like, yeah, I'm looking through the checks. I thought we had like a flat bill with you guys every month. I thought it was a flat bill. Like I know sometimes we had some projects here and there, but could you remind me of the $2,500 check that was written to you in March? And it's like, I can't remind you of it because you never wrote us a check for $2,500 in March. She's like, well, that's what the stub says. I'm like, well, that stub probably doesn't match what the actual check says, because we'd probably remember. And this is one of our, let's say, bigger clients, but people in the company know who they are. You know, they're not just kind of like lost in the shuffle. Like, we're aware of them. So it would have been brought to at least somebody in the organization's attention. And it turned out that that person, she had stolen like over $100,000 from her over the course of working with her. And kind of that person that you were describing, like that irritable person. And I mean, hindsight's 20/20, you know, when we were working with her before we knew this was going on, it was just, yeah, she sure does have a lot of opinions about the owner, but who doesn't? So do you think that there were any signs? And I mean, we don't know her backwards and forwards, but
right.
that maybe we could have noticed from the vendor perspective to maybe have brought to the attention of the owner, anything that maybe would have stood out.
Maybe if you noticed her clothes were more expensive than you would think she could afford with what you know about her. Maybe they're driving a fancy car. And again, you question, how can they afford that car when, you know, I know what they're doing and this is how much they make, and how can they afford a $900 a month car payment? Stuff like that. You hear about their vacation to the Alps. And again, you're like, how can they afford that?
And it doesn't always necessarily, because I mean, I'll see that at times and it's just, they've got a ton of credit card debt.
And right. That happens too.
Mm. But, then it happens to pay it off. Then they go down the road that obviously they shouldn't. So Alvin, you touched on, we need to have checks and balances in the organization, which I think any business owner, we should know that piece of it. But any suggestions on types of things that we should be looking at? You had mentioned the bank statements, the credit card statements. Are there any other things that maybe someone should be keeping an eye on, having a pulse on, maybe a type of reporting that they do to check for anomalies? Any suggestions in that area?
You know, you have to look at vendor and customer relationships too, and employee relationships. If they're too close to a vendor or a customer, they might be selling stuff at a discount to them and then pocketing the difference between the two of them, or the vendor's charging your employee less and you're paying the full price and they're splitting the difference in the costs.
And are there any ways to kind of sniff these out, or is it just kind of a, well, this person has a really good relationship with this vendor? And how would something like that, how could an employer detect it? Obviously the two people are in cahoots. They won't sell out the other one if they're both making money. So are there any ways that the employer on the outside could kind of put these pieces together?
They could. There would be, they probably would be spending that money they're getting. So you might see changes in their living, the means of their living. If they're hiding the money, it's going to be difficult to see. It's caught a lot. There's different techniques you can use. That's a difficult one to catch though.
Yeah. And we had actually had a guest a couple weeks ago, and he had talked about using blockchain and how usually when fraud is committed, it's, you've got four eyes on it, and there's the one person who's approving it and then the other person who's approving it, and they are working together in cahoots with each other because they are the eyes that are supposed to be watching this particular thing and they're working together. And he was talking about how with blockchain, you have everybody's eyes all over it, and it makes it virtually impossible to get millions of people to all be committing fraud. So is that something that you usually see, is like the four eyes concept, two people involved?
It happens, but the ACFE, which is the Association of Certified Fraud Examiners, states most of the time, and this is my experience, it's only one person. It's harder to get two people involved, because they have to 100% agree to everything. It's usually the lone wolf that does the most damage.
So the lone wolf, and we had talked about their behaviors, are ways that you could spot it. Buying things that they probably wouldn't be able to afford, especially if you know how much they're getting paid, and there's credit card debt, which could lead to it down the road. Any other things that people should be on the lookout for?
Sometimes if it's an employee while the fraud's going on, if it's substance abuse, their job performance might deteriorate. They might be out a lot. They're getting poor performance. They're late a lot. That's happens a lot with the substance abuse frauds.
Yeah, the substance abuse, we've seen a handful of situations. Like, one of the things that we kind of pride ourselves with, but it's a double-edged sword. We are a second chance employer. So there are people that in the past have had problems, but at the same time, if they're, and this is just, I mean, it's a little too personal. Like myself, I have almost 8 years sober. So I can recognize the past of people that, that had problems in the past, but then have gotten their lives together. And kind of the double-edged sword, though, and why this topic kind of maybe hits home more so than with others, is we would see people that we knew that they had issues in the past, but it had been years since they had any issues, stand-up member of society, doing volunteer work, have their families in their lives, everything's together, they're great employees, show up early, stay late, and it actually is just a measurable great employee who actually did turn their lives around. But then there are times, you know, we kind of paint a picture of people, and when people act out of character, we kind of just chalk it up at times as, well, you know, everybody has a bad day. You know, maybe you didn't get a whole lot of sleep yesterday. And then when you start recognizing that maybe it's a trend, and some of those things that you are talking about, it's like job performance is down consistently. So this wasn't just a had a bad day, had a bad week, had a bad month, and physical appearance, and now we're doing work from home, but you would see, you know, the eyes sunken in and the falling asleep at their desk and nodding out. And it's like, this isn't just a, oh man, he's going through a rough patch. Like so-and-so is sick at home or something. Like there's the drug abuse thing is definitely something that immediately for us, just because we've seen it so often, that it, when someone has a sharp change in character behavior, that's one of the things that immediately jumps out with us. And not so much now as it was in the past, just because it's, like I said, the double-edged sword. You want to give people these second chances. You want to give them opportunities to grow their skill set, to become good members of society. And we've had tremendous success with a lot of them. But at the same time, we've had people that just, you know, the guy nods out at his desk at the Windows login screen. And it's like, hey, you know, that doesn't just happen because you're a little sleepy. That's clearly something is going on. And then they're the aggressive type who, you know, they already have their whole backstory. Like they're very smart people. So say you are nodded out at your desk. Clearly you cannot work here anymore. This isn't happening. It's like, oh no, like I was at the dentist yesterday. Here's my doctor's note. And it says right here, the dentist wrote that I could be falling asleep at my desk. And I didn't want to embarrass myself by telling you beforehand. I thought I had it under, they've got the huge, huge backstory. And it's like,
yeah,
it's like, why do you have that good of a backstory? But they're believable people. And, you know, push comes to shove, especially when it comes to substance abuse, the people that stay out there a very long time, continuing to do what they do instead of getting help. And a lot of that does include fraud. And I know people that, you know, they can't open a bank account, just they're blacklisted everywhere for like check fraud. And it's like, no, this person just, you can't even set them up for anything because the banks won't allow them. And so do you see anything in your experience where somebody has the issue? So you spot the fraud, investigate, find out it's true, and go through that whole process. Do you see people come out on the other side with a redemption story and become class acts? Or is it usually just like, I got caught, kind of like Scooby-Doo, and it's like, and if it weren't for you fraud investigators, I would have gotten away with it?
I really haven't seen any of them come back. Yeah. I know it's possible. That's probably the exception, I would think. Because the way we were taught in my first auditing for fraud class back at Nova was people do the same stuff over and over again. They apologize for it and say it'll never happen again. But I like to believe there are people that can redeem themselves, but you got to be careful.
Yeah, 100%. And we see that not even on a fraud level, but just the human behavior. And I mean, I've worked at other organizations where it's like, well, this person really, really messed up and they're fired and then they come back. It'll never happen again. And then they are a stellar employee for 3 months. Everyone's got 3 months of just being the absolute best built into them and that tail between the legs. And then month four, well, now I've, you know, reestablished myself back to the old habits. And it's like, I don't think I've had a time where we let someone go and brought them back and it was a good move that we did, even though like we try to make it analytical. It's like, this is just a business decision. This is going to be the smart move. And it never works out. It never works out when you,
right.
It's like in a relationship, you have get like a breakup. It's like, and then you get back together. It's like, this relationship was terrible. That's why we broke up. It's the same thing,
right?
With employees. And I think it's a great place for us to leave off. Alvin, where can people find out more about you?
Well, I have my website, alhagerickcpa.net. And it has all my contact information there. I'm in Hudson, Florida. And my phone number, still keep my Broward phone number. It's 954-473-9212.
Perfect. And we'll have all that in the show notes. And guys, as always, if you enjoyed the episode, please be sure to subscribe. I appreciate all the comments and messages I'm getting from strangers on LinkedIn. It's a pretty cool experience. And as always, with Rush Tech, we do complimentary IT audits for accountants. So if you're concerned as to whether or not your company has the potential for a data breach or a hack, we can give a complimentary IT audit and make sure that everything is safe and secured. And Al, thank you so much for being on the show.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Tech Talk for Accountants show. Be sure to subscribe if you like the show. And remember, if you would like a complimentary IT audit of your business, go to rushtech.online/podcast to schedule a time with a certified technician who can look over your current IT systems and make recommendations on how to make sure you and your clients are safe.